You're about to hear an inspiring message from the team at C3 Church Bathurst. It's our prayer that it will spur you to live your best life in Him.
It's the problem to procure the hand of a maiden who is so beneath us, a humble maiden. How can you do that? You're a king. You're in royalty. You've got armies at your beck and call. You've got people. You've got things that you can just do. How can you then portray your love for somebody who's simply living in a cottage in a poor part of town? How can you do it without crushing her freedom? It's the problem. It's the problem of unequal love, of distance. Perhaps this lady was not used to perfume or the clothes of a court. Perhaps she was used to the poverty-mindedness of her world. Perhaps her family and friends would never understand. But it's the same problem that Jesus faces when he tries to transcend love, when he tries to explain how much he loves his people, to bridge the gap in a world that really doesn't care about him, that really doesn't have time for faith. How can Jesus bridge that gap? Well, this parable that Kierkegaard wrote gives us four options, four thoughts, and three of them look reasonable. Three of them could work in some cases, but only the fourth is really the answer. Now, let me run through them with reference to Luke's gospel. The first thing is that he could use force. He could force her. Force, sheer willpower. He could order her to her palace and there propose marriage. He could force her to do what he'd like her to do. But even a prince would feel like the girl that he marries would want to love him. So the sense of force is not going to work like that. He could come in all kinds of ways and make her do it, but this is what Jesus says. Now, Jesus constantly argued, if you've been reading through Luke or have read the Luke's gospel or Matthew even more strongly, you'll notice that Jesus is constantly at loggerheads with a particular group of people. Now, they're not bad people by any means. In fact, this group of people were actually trying to do the right thing in God's way. They really were. It's just that they had it all wrong. Now, this group of people is called the Pharisees. It's a funny word, but it means they were the religious leaders of their day. And they were in charge of keeping the law, the Jewish law and the customs. And these laws that have been generated over hundreds and thousands of years, and they held this legal system. Now, here's the funny thing. Even though they thought that they had it all right and together, and they were honestly trying to do good and keep the religious kind of aspect right, Jesus was continually knocking them and taking them down because they thought that by doing really good things that you could get to God. And that's an example of force. And in Luke 11 is an example. Luke 11 says, 46, "Yes," says Jesus, "what sorrow also awaits you, expert in religious law. For you crush people with unbearable religious demands and you never lift a finger to ease the burden." That's what he's saying to these people who make it so difficult to follow a religious code, who make it so hard to even follow the right things. And they don't even help people to do that. And that's why God has a low view of religion. Sounds odd, doesn't it? Religion being the activities and practices that get you closer to God. You cannot do it by working harder or by force. And you see our world is full of religious intolerance because people have got it all wrong. They don't understand that God is a God of love. And that by forcing people to do religious practices is not going to make them any better. That kind of force is based on fear and upon repercussions of punishment if you don't do X, Y, and Z. It's a master, you should, or you've got to do this. And perfect love doesn't work like that. Perfect love looks for a response. Jesus could actually force us to love him. In fact, he could have designed the whole world like that. Right in the garden, let's kind of rewrite the story, you know? Let's forget what actually happened. But what if Jesus created the garden and didn't give people any will, any free will? They just had to do exactly what God wanted them. Now, he could have done that. What did he do? He breathed in us a free will, choice, choice to choose and choice to not choose or to choose the wrong thing. What did people do? Often chose the wrong thing. There's the risk. Love is high risk, isn't it? And by doing that, God is setting up a system where people can choose to love. Love not because they're forced to do the right thing, but love because they really want to. That's love. That's the king subject, isn't it? However, cost is high. Because along with that comes sin, disappointment, evil practices, war, famine, all the things that are in our world today. Not because God can't change it, but because right at the beginning, he honored and valued human free will above perfection. False religions appeal to harsh treatment. Religious practices, they appear to be righteous, but actually they're not. But it denies our humanity and our free will. So he could force us. I want you to remember these four things out of this parable. He could force us to do what's right. Secondly, another option might be he could display his riches, his grandeur. He could show off who he was. He could arrive at her door with the most resplendent uniform, armies, maidens, who knows, you know, a display of his power, not to force her, but to wow her, for her to go, wow, wow, come with a bow, and your king. I'd like your hand in marriage. But even a prince wants to marry for love. What option would she have? She'd be overawed by this grandeur and splendor and kind of have to say yes, but does she really want it? Does she really want to follow the king? In Luke 11:16, it's interesting that people would run around and ask Jesus for a miracle. Actually, come back to the verse in a sec, Beth. I've had people say to me, if your God is real with a cup of water, get him to turn this water into wine now and I'll believe in him. Ever had those, you know, conversations? If God is real, let him appear right over there right now. Or if God is real, let that bush kind of burn right now and then I'll believe. Doesn't God do that? Because an outward display of his glory is actually going to undermine his love. Because people are going to be overawed by his glory and not enter into his love. This is what was happening in Luke 11:16. Others trying to test Jesus demand that he show them a miraculous sign from heaven to prove authority. See that? Wanting him to do something. Jesus, on cue, go do something magic. Now, as if they hadn't seen the miracles, the healings, the stuff, you know, the feedings of the 5,000, as if they hadn't seen that already, they want an on-demand sign to show off who this person is. Prove it, Jesus. Prove it. Why doesn't he prove it? Because it would not involve love. It would involve an, I told you so, I am real. What sort of response is that going to draw from the people? Wow. Yes, I should follow him. Should, not a longing to. Jesus draws us. That's why God rarely appears to people. Apart from the fact that he'd die, or angels, we would see his splendor and glory. People chase religious experiences, don't they? You know, that's why a lot of people make a pilgrimage to somewhere like India or Tibet or Bhutan or somewhere there where there's religion of some sort, and they may be overwhelmed by all the gods on display and the temples and things like that, and get a feeling of, you know, Eastern mysticism or religion, but it's actually not a personal relationship. It's just a wow. It'll leave you empty. It'll leave you cold. So the first one, what was the first one? Of course. Oh, teacher practices. It could force us. Second, he could display his glory. Third one is interesting. Out of four, six counting. He could disguise himself. He could masquerade as a peasant, try and persuade her, gain her interest. So he could you know, put on the clothes of a peasant as a disguise, come and persuade her. And then once he'd won her heart, he could go, actually, I'm the king. Take off his mask and surprise her. Now, what's wrong with that argument? Well, here's an idea. It's fake love. It's phony. It's trying to appeal to somebody's senses without being really genuine about who you are. And the world is full of fake love. The world is full of pretense and trying to be something that you're really not. It's not going to work for the king because the subject, the maiden, may not actually like him. He hasn't married with the full knowledge of who this person actually is. Therefore, trust is betrayed. This isn't how Jesus worked, because God never fakes it. Jesus didn't masquerade as a man. He became one. Massive difference. Understand that Jesus didn't pretend to be human or was only a little bit human. He was completely human. Not completely human, the whole theology falls apart. Jesus comes as completely human. Love what Philippians 2, apologies, it's not in Luke. Philippians 2, 6, 7 says, though he was God. He did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. That's different. He left heaven. He left the privileges. He derobed and became one of us. It's called the incarnation. Fake disguise, he was not. He was the real deal. He was genuinely human while maintaining 100% godhood. But that's not going to work. Fakeness breeds mistrust, and trust and love go very powerfully together. So he couldn't, force her, wow her with his glory of power, or fake it. None of those options would ever bridge that gap properly between the king and the maiden that he loved. It leaves the only option for the king. He could employ high-risk love, as Philippians has alluded to. He would give up his kingly role and move into her neighborhood. And there he would take up work as, for example, a carpenter. And should she come to love him? Should she? By chance, perhaps she might love him. As he had already loved her, then he would ask her for her hand. That's risky. There's risks at every level. There's risks of entering a new world, of learning the language of the people, of learning the customs, learning how they think, of taking up a role as a carpenter when you had everyone at your beck and call. If you break something, you just get someone else, come and fix my bed or my chair. Now he's got to learn how to work with his hands. Now he's got to pick up things. He's got to cook for himself. He's got to get jobs. He's got to live in a society that was far less comfortable than he ever. This is risky, isn't it? And then there's a chance that she might not even like him. She might have already got married. Tommy got a job and a place to live and, oh, no, married the boy next door. It's risky. She might not want him. It's weird. He's obviously from somewhere else. But do you know what? High-risk love is the kind of love that God gives. It's high risk. It's high risk because it takes a chance on people. Luke 19, verse 10 says, the Son of Man has come to save, to seek, and to save that which was lost. But these two words here, come to seek, that means to actively look for. It's not just a casual, oh, where's my pen? Oh, can't find it. I'll get another one. That's not seeking. Seeking is like our prayer meetings. Isn't it phenomenal? We have had such a ball praying around this city every morning for 2 weeks. We've got 1 week to go. So amazing. We've had a 10 people walking through the frost, blizzards, in the morning, seeking, God, show us where you want your building. Show us where it is, God. Fasting and praying and seeking and asking God. That's seeking. Walking up every street we can find in the CBD. Ears open, eyes open. I love that because that's what causes a miracle when you're on your front foot and walking. That's kind of seeking. Or seeking when you lose something of precious value. And you keep looking for it. Keep looking for it. So Jesus, this verse says that Jesus is like that. He doesn't just kind of have a quick look. No. He keeps on it. He keeps seeking until he's found it. And then he's going to save. Now that word in the Greek, it means complete restoration. Body, soul, spirit, eternal life. It means everything's put back together. It's not just kind of saving like you do in a bank account. You know, it's a complete package of being well again. That word means. This is the right way. This number four is the answer. It's how Jesus works. Love takes risks. It's incarnation. It's coming into a place. It's the love that moves into the neighborhood. I love how Eugene Peterson writes John 1:14, which is Message version. It says this: the word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. See that? Comes out of heaven and he moves in next door. This is the kind of love. This is the kind of Jesus that we serve. So the things are not going to work. You can't force people. You can't wow them with glory. I've forgotten number three. You can't fake it. You genuinely have to get inside people's worlds. So here's just really simple. As I pondered those things and thought about this parable and the gospel as we've read it this month, these four thoughts that I had. I had three thoughts until I started praying this morning. And God said, there's one more. I think this is the key. So number one is that putting all that together, first thing, Jesus knows our state. You love this? He knows we're human. And with that comes error, fallibility, disease, hardship, depression, anxiety. He knows that those things are part of the human condition and yet still loves us. They say that love is blind and marriage is an eye-opener. They say that. I've not experienced that. Close call. It'll be a long afternoon. But Jesus is not like that. Jesus loves unconditionally, no matter what. He loves you on your bad hair day. He loves it when you feel really bad. Crap. You know that word? You just wake up. Still loves you. He loves you when you're being a goose. Being, you know, just crazy or, you know, you're out of your mind. He loves you when you're sick or angry or downright rude or out of the picture. He left heaven for you regardless of what that was. He has such grace and such understanding for who we are and where we are. He knows it. It's a clear picture of grace, isn't it, of humanity. Grace and favor go hand in hand, and they're way ahead of legalism, way, way more significant than a you must or you should or you have to. It's a I want. That's what it draws. That's what grace draws. Being human is okay. Sometimes you got to tell yourself that. Sometimes you got to say, hey, I'm human, it's okay. Expect things to go wrong. When you got people around you, hey, they're human. Expect things to go wrong. But, here's a key. Develop grace in your own attitude towards you. Yeah? How we treat ourselves is often a reflection of how we treat other people. If I'm really harsh on myself and I get it wrong, idiot. Always get it wrong. How am I going to treat the next person who gets it wrong? Slap them around. Give yourself a break. Pastoral advice. It's okay. Jesus still loves you. Yeah, you get things wrong. Yeah, you say sorry. Yeah, you in. But you know what? Have grace towards yourself, then you will see that grace flow to your family, to your friends, to your neighborhood, church. Don't be too hard on yourself. The world is hard on people. Now, you put one wrong thing up on Twitter or, you know, one thing that's out of line out there, and you look at the media that's happening at the moment, crucifying people who perhaps have a different citizenship to someone else. They didn't know. Well, who knows? Cynical, can't we? Getting slapped around because we live in this world of finger pointing and you know what? We're human. We don't know who's on our passport or where our mum was born. Facetious, but there is a sense that our world is really harsh. Really harsh. You know the whole same-sex marriage debate? Wow. It's drawing out. I'm going to deal with that the week after. Just really give you some thoughts on how to process that because it's such an important issue. One more thing. The first one, first thought, give yourself a break. He knows you're human. It's all good. Second thought, wrapping up that parable, is that the church is Jesus on earth today. Here. We are Jesus. Did you know that? Christians actually means little Christ. What a Christian means is simply that, hey, Jesus, come and use your body because your body's broken. Come and use this body. Come and live in me and do what you want to do through this body. That's what it is to be a Christian. And it just happens to be millions of us on the planet. The whole thing is multiplied. Billions on the planet. So there are billions of little Christians running around everywhere. Church is God on earth today. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it. Sometimes, you know, we think, is this the church? We're all in trouble. You know. Go on about stuff. It's true. So we're not to be a holiness club or a self-righteous club or a powerful club. That would be easier sometimes. We're not to wow people by grandeur and splendor with no reciprocating love, you know. We're not to be this big thing and, wow, my God, and then we live lives that are much less. We're not to be false or fake about our God, two-sided. It's option four. High-risk love is the only way to go. It's incarnational. Love with those in our midst, whoever they might be. I love what this church is doing in the Housing Commission area in Kelso. It's incarnational. It's not from outside. It's going from within. Entering in, that's what love does. Walking with people, loving people, one by one. At the heart of the neighborhood, that's why we're passionate about having a church in the middle of the city, despite how ridiculous it looks, the cost. Let's be planted in the middle of our town. God in the center. Another thought, number three. Though we are the church and we work together, we also have personal responsibility in it. We have an opportunity. You go places that I don't. I go places you don't. That's why it works. I have neighbors that you don't. So my call in my world is to my neighborhood. Incarnational. Love entering in despite the risks. High risk love. So I have neighbors that, if I'm honest, I'm thinking, I don't know what to do next. I've tried to reach into their world. I've done all I can, I think, but you know what? Love takes risk. I need to try again. I need to try again and get myself into some people's worlds. Not just have a quick shot and go, gave it a shot. You know, invited around for a cup of tea, but they didn't come. So, enough it. High-risk love means I'm going to invite them again. It means I'm going to go up to their door. It means I'm going to go and just say good day, see how I can help them again and again and again. It's that sense of personal responsibility. We take risks. We often fail and get it wrong. to win the hands of the maidens around him. Just as people rejected Jesus, we can expect no less, but that's okay. Big people. Yet we must, because we have a world of pain and confusion, misunderstanding right around us. And number four, what the Lord reminded me of this morning is that put yourself in the other shoe. We're actually the maidens Jesus came to rescue. I probably want to call myself a maiden. People, James. I'm the one that Jesus saw in a cabin somewhere. You know, as he was king, as he was wandering around through the poor part of town, I was one of those sitting there. Think about the other thing, the other side. As Jesus walks through, I'm the one in a crowd, like Bartimaeus, tries to see Jesus, and as he's short, he tries to get up over the tree. I'm the one. No, not Bartimaeus. Zacchaeus. I know my Bible very well. Zacchaeus is the short guy. He's blind. Well, he might have been blind too. He was definitely, yeah. Bartimaeus was short. One of them. Here's the thing. How do I respond? He comes by my window. Disguised? No. Glory? No. Forcing? No. As one, as a human being. How do I respond to him? Do I just say no? Stay in my cabin? Stay in my little world? Do I just let that opportunity go by, that invitation to be taken up into a different world? Do I just stay in the littleness and the smallness and the poverty of my world? Or do I take a chance? See, love works both ways. High-risk love from Jesus is to enter our world as a person, into our world. But high-risk love reciprocates, doesn't it? So therefore, I, on the other foot, look at Jesus and say, well, let's give this a shot. Let's have a go. Let's see if I can move into this palace. Let's see if I can take up residence somewhere else. Let's see what happens. And you find yourself living on a higher plane. You find yourself living seated at the right hand of God in heavenly places. You find yourself with new attitudes and new ideas and new dispositions, and you find yourself free from some of the stuff of life that other people get caught up in. And you're living in a completely different plane of life. And there's no room for the victim mentality. You know, the woe is me. Woe is me. I'm just a lowly cabin boy, or a lowly maiden. Nothing ever good happens to me. See, there's no room for that. No room for the, you know, self-pity and have a quick self-pity and move on. There's no room just to sit down and, nothing ever good happens to me. Because it has. Because Jesus has come and he has given you eternal life and he has set you in high places. He has provided all your needs. He has healed all your diseases. He has done everything he ever can. All we got to do sometimes is rise, elevate, walk with him and take a chance on love. Take a chance to see what could possibly happen if we just said yes and then kept saying yes to living life at a higher level. I love this. I love this parable. It's an incredible story. But I want us to pray and just to feel like the Lord is going to show us some things. We just pray about those four things. You join me. First responses that I'm going to ask you today. First thing is to know that he really loves you. Second thing is to commit yourself to being part of his body, really. Third thing is to take care of our individual world. And the fourth thing is to get out of the cabin, live higher. Maybe one of those things is something that the Lord is speaking about you today. No matter where you're at, first thing he's asking you is, do you know that he loves you? Do you know that you know that you know that he loves you? Without a shadow of a doubt, do you have that absolute confidence on the inside And he really loves you. He loves you enough to leave the privileges of heaven to come here. David in Psalm 18 said this, but the Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. Wow. He knows his God is my God. Not just a God, my God. You know that this morning. You know that. Second thing, commit yourself to being part of his body. Embrace your church. Go the whole way. Love, build, give, serve. In a day of cynicism and apathy, build and grow and take hold of something. High-risk love is needed to join and to stay, but it's worth it. It's not weird. Despite the countless volunteer hours and pressure of life, sometimes, you know, it's absolutely worth it to build the local church. There's nothing to lose from jumping in. It's an absolute champion. Holy Spirit. Third thing is to take care of your individual responsibility. This is the bit that's challenged me the most, to be honest. To love my neighbor. Take risks. Step into people's worlds around me. Step out of my heaven and across my road down the street. Not just at church or at C3 Cares, but in my career, my world. Take care. Those things. And the fourth thing is, maybe for some of you, it's to get out of the cabin. It's to take a leap. It's to respond to the love of Jesus, not just initially for salvation, but each day where we find ourselves living up, living with more faith, more hope, more future, more freedom. Find ourselves pushing beyond what we ever thought was possible because we know that we know that we know.
Thanks for listening. We would love to connect with you. Our services are on Sundays at 217 Howick Street at 10 a.m. for a 10:30 service. Or visit us on the web at c3churchbathurst.org. Come like a river, come like a flood. Let us be overwhelmed, baptized in your love.